Let's jump in and talk about some launches that happened or didn't happen that were on the calendar for this week. So starting with SpaceX's SXM-7 launch. That's the launch of SiriusXM's seventh next-generation satellite for their streaming radio service.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah. So talk a bit about SXM-7 and how that went this week.
Yeah, it went pretty good. They launched on their, I think it was sort of their second window attempt. It was on a Saturday. You were in Texas driving our way back, and we were watching it, and we heard that it pushed back. We're like, well, yeah, we get to see it.
We get to see it, yeah.
And yeah, I got to go on base to go view it, and wow, that thing was loud. There was a calm day for it, and it pushed back a few hours into the window. I think it launched around noonish, I think.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. And yeah, we got out there, and you know the winds are calm when the water in the swamps area in Cape Canaveral Space Force Station now. Mm-hmm. It's just glass.
Just totally still, just totally reflective.
Completely still. All the photographers got super excited because that means we get great reflection shots. And then it gets pushed back a few hours and the wind starts, a little slight breeze has gone and like it disappeared and we didn't get any reflection. But like, yeah, that thing, because there was no wind, like pushing the sound away, that thing was loud.
It was.
And, it was a successful mission. Anyway, they deployed it. It was a kind of pretty generic Falcon 9 launch. We've seen them many, 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 many times. Went out straight east, landed on the booster. Booster landed on Just Read the Instructions, I believe, on their drone ship out there in the ocean, mm-hmm. and returned yesterday. Yeah. No, Thursday.
Thursday returned.
Thursday.
Now, this was, for me, my viewing experience was me and my son Rory, he's three. We went out to view from the state road, behind a bunch of water as well. And we had that same experience where it was just super flat water, gorgeous weather. And
best dad pictures ever.
Yeah.
Cutest launch photos I've ever seen.
We went to Ron John's surf shop and he picked out a bunch of toys to play with when I was thinking it was going to be like in just a few minutes. And then it turned out it was pushed back by about an hour. And those toys came in handy so much because he was entertained the whole time. And we had, you know, an hour and a half of like good quality father-son time out there. And enough time to kind of like use the Ron John bag to pick up trash on the beach. And nice. We filled up that bag with trash. It was amazing that there was so much trash there. But it felt like, you know, good use of our time. And you were trying to use his toy telescope to kind of frame up a cool shot from
me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, me and another photographer had he has his like his photo series where he calls them Buddy and Woods from a mispronunciation on the show, but like it was Woody and Buzz from Toy Story. And he's been trying to do the photo ideas, and I'm sitting in your apartment. I look over and I see his toy telescope, and I go like, "That'd be a good one to do, like perfect." So I message him. He's all excited. I'm all excited. We start driving. I'm halfway there I'm driving on 528 from Orlando to the Cape, and I realize I forgot it. and I was texting if you could bring it by the time we caravaned out onto the base. And by the time like we were caravaning out, you were like pulling up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh,
which ended up being perfect because then he got to use it, and he actually like, so he's three, you know, he loves launches, but like a T-minus 30 seconds is like too long for him to focus on, like, you know, look in the direction of the rocket. But because he had his telescope, he used it like binoculars. He picked it up and was like looking around, and he would like look at the launch as it happened. So it was awesome. And got some cool pictures of that. It was a blast. What can I say? It was a Saturday afternoon well spent, and it was great. And this was a Maxar satellite. So they shared some cool pictures of it before liftoff. And again, we talked about it last week, but this is the first customer flown launch on a fleet leading, on a life leading booster, a fleet leader in this case, tied with another one that launched Starlink. So this was the seventh time it launched and landed. Now we just imagine that sometime in 2021 and maybe, you know, the first couple of months that there's the eighth flight for this booster or the other booster that has reached seven times launched and landed. So they're getting really close to Elon's goal of 10. And after that, you know, we'll see what happens. But that was awesome. And then booster return. So it was supposed to be NROL 108 on Thursday Thursday morning with booster return timed similarly, so that maybe we'd see like a launch, or at least the return to landing site landing, where the booster literally returns back to land with the booster from this Sirius XM satellite launch coming back from the ocean into Port Canaveral. Weather was atrocious. The launch got pushed back. There was a problem with the upper stage anyway that needs to be looked at, and now that launch is later today, in just an hour and a half or so. The booster did return from the ocean to port a little bit later than expected, because it was kind of on hold for the launch. And this was, again, just like the other booster that had flown and landed seven times, it came back leaning with a serious
The last one that came in wasn't leaning. It was actually it was the Crew One booster.
Oh, Crew One booster. Yeah.
Crew One booster was came back leaning, and that was his first flight. We don't really ever know much that goes out there when it lands. Like, we know that they have to, after it lands, they have to safe the rocket. They make sure the flight termination charges are dearmed, and the fuel and the oxidizer boils the oxidizer, liquid oxygen, is like boiled off and depressurized, and then the crew has to hop on, they have to secure it, and we don't know all the details, but we kind of were like thinking that there were probably some issues because they were taking a while to secure this booster.
Sure.
And so much it came back, and we started seeing out the horizon. First of all, I shared photos of a buoy for my first photo.
You watermarked, you assigned photos of buoys our Space Explorer watermark. So they're sacred.
It was a really great photo of a buoy off in the horizon. All right. It was a really awesome buoy photo.
It was probably straighter than the booster was, though.
It was straighter than the booster. Yeah, it very much was. And yeah, as it started coming over the horizon, someone says, "I think it's tilted." And someone goes like, no, that's just a whole illusion. And it comes back, oh yeah, it's tilted. It was much, and it was probably one of the most tilted, most leaning booster, we've seen.
Yeah.
So not sure what happened. It definitely landed perfectly fine. It slid over. You can tell, it slid over from comparing where it landed on the stream and where it came in on the port. And then, yeah, it was, that was hilarious. Watching that thing come out tilted, and the little Octograbber robot's out there holds onto it, was just holding on for dear life.
Yeah. I think the important thing to know about this is that, just like with the Crew One booster, it's amazing that the SpaceX is recovering these boosters, not just leaving them in the ocean and that's it, because they can be, recovered, recuperated, and reused. As far as we know, when they come back leaning like this, it's, you wrote the story on Space Explorer about it, how they have these crush cores, and they're kind of like, it's kind of in the design for this to happen, and that it's not necessarily because of how it landed, but possibly because of how it handled the ocean after landing before returning. And that, if there's rough seas, if there's, some sort of a storm coming in or a change in the weather coming in, that it can create an environment where, that massive booster, it's kind of a miracle that it even stays up on the drone ship standing at all.
Very much so.
And so that's probably more what happened, is that between landing successfully and returning to port, it endured some serious, surf waves.
It was around the waves real good. And these crutch cars, they're kind of the last effort, because once they go, you have to replace them. They're one time use. That's the only way that they landed. Like, they had landing legs, and they just relied on the crush drawers to keep the booster alive, pretty much. But they've gotten good enough to where, that's the plan, is to hit zero right before they touch the ground. Yeah. But, sometimes I know we've seen sometimes where like a wave might have like moved the drone ship up, and so it lands harder on like one side, mm-hmm. and that causes it. But yeah, this one must have just been gotten some serious waves on the way back.
Yeah, yeah, and you know they make the adjustment and it comes out straight. You know, like we saw.
Yeah, this one because you can actually see if you have like a big 600 millimeter telescope, you know, big super telephoto one, mm-hmm. you can actually see little marks on the legs, and that actually determines how far the crush core has been used. Mm-hmm. No idea why they have that publicly for us to see, but they do, and makes literally no sense for them, but and maybe it does. And 4-1 Crew 1 came in and went in. He had about like 4 or 5 lines left. This one, no lines left. No lines. It bottomed out the thing. So there is a slight concern of if there is any, because now if there is any movement while that crush core is fully used, that now is going all the way into the booster itself, mm-hmm. all the forces. Sure.
Yeah.
So possibly there is concern for possible damage to the booster, which wouldn't be good. But obviously it's still standing, so mm-hmm. hopefully it's slight repairs and they can launch it if there is any.
Yep, yep. So overall, SXM-7 was a successful mission and
very successful.
And recovery. Let's talk about something else. Astra, they're a startup that they're about 3.5-4 years old. They've mm-hmm. they've been trying to reach orbit, if not reach orbit, reach space for a few launches this year. They have their rocket called Rocket 3.2 is the latest version. There's 3.1, yeah. There's 3.0. This is 3.2, which is the third version of Rocket 3. Whatever. And
they had version 1 and version 2, I think, before yeah. that. Like their other two earlier launches that were different designs.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. So Astra's Rocket 3.2 is their first rocket to launch and actually reach space, so not, you know,
it didn't reach orbit, but it reached space.
Yeah, it was just shy, you know, a few kilometers per second of reaching orbit, but it.
I think it was a half a kilometer a second. It needed.
Yeah,
it literally was like so close from reaching orbit.
Yeah, but this was a tremendous deal for Astra. They launched out of Alaska. They're founded by a couple of folks with former NASA experience. They've got a former SpaceX VP. In charge as well. So they've got experience and they're one of these small payload launchers. And by reaching space, they're able to move forward with a lot of their contracts and not just reaching space this time, which was a huge deal for them, a big way to end 2020. They're able to, with their next launch, they'll probably reach orbit because they said that they're able to use the same vehicle design and the same software. So no changes to the rocket or how it's implemented and do that same thing. And they think that they'll be able to take what they learned from this launch and with the same hardware and software reach orbit and with, I believe with payloads on board this time because they're so confident in what they're able to do. So they've already got customers lined up. They also received, through NASA, their Venture Class Launch Services Demonstration 2 contract, some funding from NASA. Mm-hmm. So let's see, the $3.9 million as a reward for the small sat launch program. They're in leagues with Relativity Space. You received $3 million, and Firefly, who received $9.8 million in this. So that was before they launched. Very similar in time to when they had their launch attempt. So NASA was confident that they'd be able to do it. They pulled it off. Very big deal for Astra. And that's a company that we have to watch in 2021 because they're going to make news when they reach orbit for the first time and then kind of become operative. So that's very neat. Virgin Galactic.
Yes.
We talked about how this month they had their, next suborbital space plane flight attempt where they're going to try to reach space. They tried. They had an issue. They did not reach space. What happened there, Seth?
So if you guys don't know about what Virgin Galactic, kind of like how it operates, there's two aircraft that are used. They have the carrier aircraft, and then they have the Spaceship One or Spaceship Two, sorry, VSS Unity, they call it, suborbital space plane. It called a space plane, but and so they fly out the carrier aircraft, carries the space plane up, and they drop it, and it ignites its engine, and it goes up to into I don't remember the altitude, but up around the Kármán line. area, around 100 kilometers.
And the idea long term is that you can conduct science in that area.
It's a very useful thing to have.
You can be a tourist. You can spend a lot of money and ride. In this case, they've got a couple of pilots, but no test folks on board and no customers.
Yeah, so
certainly.
This flight was the two pilots, of course. There's two pilots on every flight, and then there's they had the payloads, I believe, for NASA on their scientific experiments. When they dropped it, there was an issue with the computer. I believe that they said the computer disconnected. Don't know what that means exactly. If there was a physical disconnection or a digital disconnection, something happened there. And so when they were starting up the engine, it says it registered the disconnection. It shut down the engine, which was it's supposed to do. It was abort to keep everything safe. They don't want to light that engine in case there's something bad, so they cut it off. And pretty much that turns that plane into a glider. And it glided back to the runway at Spaceport America. Astronauts are safe. They said, I think the vehicle is all good. And then it was actually weird that I was watching the coverage of it. And the people were saying that their carrier aircraft was just doing touch and goes. I guess they took the time to do more testing with their carrier aircraft since they had the airspace.
Sure.
And, so I guess they got some good data out of it. What happened, and they're going to make this aircraft much safer now with what they learned today. This week.
Mm-hmm. So what they do next? They're going to repeat this test flight in 2021. They're going to, and that's the test flight with two pilots, as we mentioned. They're going to have another test flight that includes mission specialists in the cabin. So that's two flights out, or two flights in 2021. And then they're going to have a test flight with founder Richard Branson. That's three. So
that's their final flight before they go completely public.
Yeah. So if each flight is successful, they'll move on to the next flight. So there's at least three planned. And then it's possible by that cadence that we could see customers fly on Virgin Galactic in 2022. So, if those next three flights as planned are successful, 2021 could be the year that Virgin Galactic kind of pulls off their whole design and they begin talking about what they do and not just what they plan to do.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be exciting. On the other hand, another Virgin company, Virgin Orbit, they launch a small rocket from the wing of a custom 747, called Cosmic Girl, and Launcher One is the name of the rocket. And they planned to have a second demonstration flight for this Launcher One rocket, where they take flight and the plane drops the rocket ignites and then hopefully goes into space and orbits. They had to push back the whole thing just because they're understaffed right now because of COVID-19 restrictions in, I believe, New Mexico. So, it's disappointing for them. But rather than proceed understaffed and underprepared, they just say, we're gonna, you know, when the situation improves, when we're better staffed to handle this, we'll resume. So that's still up in the air, but it's not going to be this month. And then finally, OneWeb, the, internet satellite company that went bankrupt earlier this year after kind of running out of money and a business plan, got new funding in part by the British government. They are back in action. They've launched what was described as a successful mission. And they launched with a Soyuz rocket, right?
Yes, they launched out of Soyuz. I believe that was the one. Was that the one out of there was two Soyuz launches they were counting down, one in French Guiana and one in I think it was Plistec. Cosmodrome is how you pronounce it. I think that was the one in there because I think I saw a video of the launch and there was snow on the ground when they launched.
Yeah,
and which was really cool to see. We don't see that down here in Florida.
Yeah,
I wish. But
this was from East Asia, so this was I should practice my pronunciation. But Vostochny Cosmodrome.
Vostochny. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Okay. Yeah. The Far East one that they have.
Yeah.
Their newer one.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. OneWeb is like, I always describe OneWeb as like, it's the country that likes to hold hands with a lot of countries.
Mm-hmm.
So it's funded by the British government and I think an Indian venture capitalist group.
Yes.
And then they build their Airbus of France, builds their satellites in Florida of the United States, and they ship those to Ariane Space, which is also, I think, French, but mostly part of Europe as a whole, who launches their on Soyuz rockets built in Russia, either from French Guiana in South America or Russia, or sometimes in Kazakhstan. Like, it's just a group that likes to hold hands with every country in the Northern Hemisphere.
They're doing the best they can to get to space however they can. So.
Yeah, pretty
and much. And after several hours, the mission was called a success. I think they were launching 74 satellites in this case.
74, really?
I think that's the number.
Oh my god!
Yeah. At first, it was like they're like successful two deployed. It was like hours went by, and they're like, okay, it's a full success. Okay, take your word for it.
I remember watching there was an Indian launch that happened years ago. They launched I think like over 100 like satellites in one mission, and the video of the deployer is just like just shooting them out like little tic-tacs, just shooting them out.
Yeah. Let's shift gears to Space Launch System at Stennis Space Center. The core stage is at Stennis Space Center in South Mississippi near the state line with Louisiana. We spoke before about how, Stennis Space Center is conducting this green run test where there are 8 steps that ends with a hot fire test where they fire the core stage of Space Launch System for, about 8 minutes in place. And, that's going to be a glorious 8 minutes. But first, they have to pass the 7th test, which is the wet dress rehearsal, where they load the core stage with propellant. And it's kind of crazy. Like they showed some information this week about how they bring in the propellant, and it's like on fuel tanks on barges. Like there's like the kind of like the canal or whatever right next to the B-2 test stand at Stennis Space Center, and they like they bring up barges and like hose over. So the gas station is like on water. It's wild.
Interesting.
Yeah. You know, they had the SU last week where they were on schedule for the wet dress rehearsal. They measured in the wrong temperatures for the liquid oxygen delivery somewhere in the delivery system. It was the wrong temperature. They worked out a way to do it correctly. They resumed this past Wednesday. Presumably it went well. They've been kind of quiet on it, or else I've just missed it, but, it does. They haven't given a date for the hot fire test yet, and so I think the last I saw was like they're going to continue delivering fuel, and so maybe it's like a days long experience that they're undergoing. But anyway, the idea is that before the end of the month, hopefully they complete the wet dress rehearsal and they move on to the static fire hot test. Their plan was to do that on the week of the 20th of December. So that would be this coming up week that we're in. They're going to be behind on that. I think they need at least a week, maybe 2 weeks to, study the data from the wet dress rehearsal. So I think it's probably likely that we look at like the first half of January for this test to be completed. We just haven't heard anything yet. And so we'll see what happens there. But fingers crossed that goes well. And then Space Launch System, of course, is going to be the rocket that sends the Orion spacecraft to the moon for the Artemis missions, Artemis 1, 2, and 3. And this week we got a lot of Artemis news. In Canada, there is news that there's cooperation between NASA and the Canadian Space Agency where on the Artemis 2 mission, this is the mission to fly astronauts on Orion, around the moon for like a 2 or 3 week period. And I think Orion is like, what, like 4 or 6 astronauts on board?
I think four.
Four, yeah.
Operational number, okay. If I remember correctly.
So one of those four astronauts will be the first Canadian astronaut to fly around the moon. And that's part of an agreement between NASA and the CSA. Yep. So, That's news this week. They also have an agreement to work on the Artemis Gateway around the moon. And then finally, on a later Artemis mission, the first astronaut from Canada will walk on the moon. So we don't know that that's Artemis 3, but it does kind of hint at future Artemis missions, Artemis 4 and beyond. So that's...
Well, yeah, and they will be... I mean, they're the only one with this contract so far, so I think they'll probably would be the first. I'd be interested to see if Russia actually goes on with it, because that would be kind of one thing they might.
I mean, that's like negotiation leverage for NASA is like, look, work with us, because so far there's not a lot of cooperation between Russia and Artemis at all.
No, they're building. I think they're building one module. It's like the power unit. It's someone with power, and that's it. That's like the only thing they're doing. They're not doing anything else. No rocket either. They sent it there.
Yeah.
Like they're just building a module.
Right. I loved seeing this Canada story because it's one thing for NASA to have to position itself to get funding from Congress to reach its budget to complete the Artemis mission and actually make the Artemis program real. But when you have the cooperation of other countries, then you've got, hopefully a buy-in from those countries, and they're able to kind of rally their country, their representatives around the idea. And it's just that much more support and then that much more writing on the line. So, what a great way to do this.
And I love it because everyone forgets that Canada has astronauts.
Yeah.
A small little core of astronauts. There's four of them. Yeah. It's not like the, like probably 30 or 40 of them in NASA. It's not the big group like NASA has, but everyone forgets the most famous astronaut currently still alive is Colonel, is Chris Hadfield.
Uh-huh.
He's from Canada.
Yep.
Like,
he's so nice.
Yeah. So he's so awesome and everyone loves him. Everyone forgets that Canada has astronauts too.
Yep.
More than just robotics.
Their four current astronauts are, Colonel Jeremy Hansen, David St. Jacques, Jennifer, Saidi Gibbons, and Joshua, Kutrick. So one of those four will be the astronaut to ride around the moon on Orion on Artemis 2. And that's likely like a 2023 mission. So that's exciting that there's going to be buy-in from Canada.
Super.
And, you also had mentioned in your story and your coverage about the Canada RM3, that'll be part of Gateway, right? And is it that all robotics will run through Canada?
Apparently no, yes. All robotics will be, operated through for the Gateway. Will be operated in their headquarters in, I believe, Quebec.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they didn't mention they're building a new place for it, but that's where they currently are operated.
Uh-huh.
Right now, it's between, they can either operate them in Houston at the NASA Mission Control or there in Quebec.
Mm-hmm.
And for Gateway, anything robotic related will be handled in Quebec.
Yeah, I love this being an international thing because, I mean, we're, as a planet, we're global and we're not just the divisions of our nation. So, it's terrific to see. And speaking of international partners, this week Airbus officially handed off the first European service module to NASA.
Yep.
This is going to be part of the Space Launch System for the Artemis 1 mission. So speak a bit about that.
Yeah. So, Airbus has been building over the past 8 years, designing, developing, and testing the European service module for Orion. That's kind of like it's not technically called a stage, but it's kind of the last little engine that gives it that push to get into lunar orbit and then to get it back to Earth. It also has, life power and life support systems and has the solar arrays on it help power that thing and keep it pretty much alive while it's out there in the moon. And officially, this week, they handed it over to NASA. They completed their review of it, and they handed it over, and it was all done through teleconference. It was about 80 people, that they said, on a teleconference, which I can't imagine if one person's talking while not muted, how terrible that is to find that person who's not muted, with 80 people. So, yeah, that's super good news. We're slowly getting everything's coming together. The boosters are there. The core stage is finishing up. The Orion capsule's ready. Now the service module, the upper stage is also ready. So yeah, but the Orion capsule is kind of like the next part to get finished up, I think. And there's some news about that with the comms card.
Yeah, so I think it was last week or maybe even 2 weeks ago we talked about this report that The Verge had published where there's this redundant backup system for a power and data unit communication card in Orion that was dead when it was powered on. It did not power on, and the idea there is that Orion has been sitting ready to go for a long, long time, and by the time it gets ready to go, one of these redundant power and data unit communication cards was no longer functional. And so there was part of the document that The Verge had published was all the scenarios, ranging from, what do? We do nothing because it's a backup system, to what's the worst case scenario if we proceed with replacing it. How long could that take? And it would be like 9 months plus 3 months to complete the whole process. So a full year possibly just to get this thing replaced, and then that's risky because it involves getting to a very hard to locate area in this spacecraft. And so NASA made a decision this week as of what to do. And their decision is to do nothing. And they call this use as is the name of their option. Mm-hmm. And because it's a backup system and an overall loaded redundant system, they think it's okay, especially because there's no astronauts on board the Artemis 1 mission. It's strictly an uncrewed test flight. You know, we spoke before about Artemis has flown in, I think, 2015 or so, or Orion flew in 2015 or so, and that was strictly a high orbit around the Earth and not to the Moon. So it was kind of to simulate the reentry, but not to actually go to the Moon and back. And so this will be, before we have astronauts on board, this will be going to the Moon and back. So what they said that, evaluating the option, they decided to use as is because of the high degree of available redundancy, versus removing and replacing the box. They determined that the issue, due to limited accessibility to this particular box, the degree of intrusiveness to the overall spacecraft systems and other factors, that the risk of collateral damage outweigh the risk associated with the loss of one leg of redundancy in a highly redundant system. My take on this was they really want to meet their schedule. They're still talking about November 2021 for the launch of Artemis 1. There was a thing this week where the Canadian Space Agency had mentioned 2022 for Artemis 1. That got a lot of play in the press, but it seems to just be, you know, of kind of a misspeak, and that as far as NASA is concerned, they're still on track for November 2021. We did see this week too that the booster stacking for the solid rocket boosters for a space launch system, they've kind of delayed the start of that into January because they have kind of a shelf life of so many months, you know, up to a year, I think, from when they begin stacking to when they can launch before there's an issue. And so that's kind of a clue too, that they are buying some time, but definitely in the first 2 months of 2021, we're going to be looking very closely at space launch system, core stage testing, delivery of core stage to, from Stennis to Kennedy Space Center. And that will determine if they can meet their November 2021, no later than launch date. So at least with this Orion issue, they decided, we've got a lot of systems in place to rely on. So hopefully this doesn't come back to bite them, and that, you know, the power and data unit communication card fails and there's no backup for it. It's one of many, I think one of eight. So it's not you know, super critical. So hopefully this works out.
If they're going to risk something a little bit, I mean, well, they don't want to risk, you know, losing the mission, but obviously they've done their assessment and the risk is less than the improvements of replacing.
Yeah, I definitely feel like if there are astronauts on board, though, that they'd make a different decision, that they'd say.
If astronauts on board, yeah, there's nothing they're going to do to not make that thing safer.
Yep. So let's shift gears a bit to Space Force. We're into the military. We'll start out with, what do you call a member of the Space Force? They've been called Space Force members until yesterday when Vice President Mike Pence...
before they were airmen, you know, that they just kind of used the same thing for the Air Force. They officially come out and they are called Guardians.
Space Force Guardians.
And I right now, I'm 100% confirmed. I think General Raymond is just a meme lord and he just loves the memes and he's just going to go full in with it. Because there was a whole joke for like months that the Space Force is the Guardians of the Galaxy, and they come out with the name, and they come out with Guardians. So I was thinking maybe they were using the term Guardians, but they were going to be called Guardsmen. I'm sure that's what people probably would be preferred to call themselves, would be Guardsmen rather than Guardians. But
think Guardians. I think Guardians is all right.
It fits.
It would be super fitting if they were called the Space Guard and not Space Force, which would also brand them in a better light than like aggressive, you know, it'd be more like defensive, you know, mm-hmm. and securing our assets in space. But speaking of Space Force and the Guardians, who are the members of the Space Force, astronaut Michael Hopkins, who's on board the International Space Station right now, he flew on the Crew One
first
launch.
The first true Guardian of the Galaxy.
He is the first Space Force Guardian in space because he transferred from the Air Force. So the Space Force was a ceremony on Friday afternoon. Michael Hopkins, perfect. Guardian of the ISS, if not the galaxy.
Is that what we're called? Yeah, Michael Hopkins, the guardian of the ISS.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, that was cool. Like, I missed the whole, I totally forgot about it. Like, I remember writing about it in the article, and all of a sudden, it happened, like, was it yesterday morning or this morning? I don't remember when it happened, but all
yeah,
of a sudden,
this is Friday afternoon, yeah.
Friday afternoon, yeah.
There's video of the ceremony on Space Explorer, yeah.
Yeah, I totally missed it. I wanted to watch it, and yeah. All of a sudden, like, yeah, it's cool. Yeah, we have a first time it's ever happened in space. Someone switched branches, so... that's super, super cool to see, and cool the Space Force finally has a astronaut in their
their first astronaut, and he transferred in space. So he's been in the Air Force since 1992, so 28 years, and he's worked with advanced space system technology. So he was just primed to be a member of the Space Force, to be a guardian of the Space Force. So Michael Hopkins, all right. And moving on in Space Force news, one guardian of the Space Force this week was knocked down a rank for using gym time to purchase a PlayStation 5. So he's like,
I mean, come on,
guardian of the consoles.
When else are you gonna buy it? they're hot commodities nowadays.
In the memorandum, for record, his response to the whole situation of using half an hour of fitness time to secure a PlayStation 5, you know, a real hard console to get your hands on these days. Their response was, YOLO, you only live once.
Oh my God.
PS5 is greater than simple letters of discipline. The reprimand stated, you were late to work and insinuated to your supervisor that buying a PlayStation was more important to you than disciplinary consequences of your actions. You go, Guardian.
You go. Alrighty. are our Guardians.
Those are our Guardians. So hopefully they weren't trying to get Cyberpunk's 2077.
Oh, man. If they did, I don't think it is worth it.
Really backfired. And then finally this week, you know, so the whole... Space Force turned one year old this year. Month, they, you know, and there's just a lot of confusion. Like, I'm really okay with Space Force. It's giving a label to a branch of the or division of the Air Force that was already very much handling space matters. What I'm a little bit concerned about is the U.S. Space Command sort of broadcasting reasons for Space Force to exist in an aggressive way, in a different way now, that's different from before. And so this week, the U.S. Space Command said that Russia conducted an anti-satellite missile test. The idea being that Russia could have the capabilities of, basically, like, if we've got, like, a reconnaissance satellite taking it down, it's like, okay, that's scary.
And it's weird because this is not a new concern.
Sure.
It's been a concern for many, many years. I mean, the U.S. has conducted these same tests. They haven't said if it was a conducted successful test. And if it was a successful test, if it actually targeted a satellite or not to try to, like, a decommissioned satellite, which they usually do.
Yeah.
Because really, I don't know why anyone wants to do this, to be honest. Like, it's really not productive to anyone. It harms yourself more than it harms other people as well.
Because it's just you're just going to ramp up on either side. What happens?
You're just even then if you destroy a satellite, now you have all this debris in orbit, and that is a debris field in orbit is probably the worst thing you can ever have in space to any other satellite. And then if that hits another satellite and destroys that satellite, now you have bigger debris field, and we don't want that.
Yeah. So in this case, the satellite, the satellites came within 100 miles of each other. General John Raymond, you know, head of Space Force, said, we view this behavior as unusual and disturbing. General James Dickinson, commander of the U.S. Space Command, said, Russia publicly claims it is working to prevent the transformation of outer space into a battlefield, yet at the same time, Moscow continues to weaponize space by developing and building on-orbit and ground-based capabilities that seek to exploit U.S. resilience on space-based systems. So... That was as much detail as was given, so it was kind of vague. But they did say that there were three anti-satellite mission tests since the first, so four total. Something to keep on our radar, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I love how they say it, like they don't do the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Yeah, we were joking about the 108 mission with the meaning of the patch. It's a gorilla because it's peaceful, yeah. But also it defends itself very fiercely. And I'm like, and he goes, just like a satellite. I'm like, are you confirming that your satellite has defensive capabilities?
Yeah, I mean, like, it is a gorilla thumping its chest and making like a roar. This is for the National Reconnaissance Office lab.
The NRO is a very interesting organization. It likes to pretend it's everyone loves them.
Yeah.
But, oh well.
Yeah. I want to give a, before we move on from the Guardians, I want to give a I want to give a bit of a, this is a quote from the announcement. The opportunity to name a force is a momentous responsibility. Guardians is a name with a long history in space operations, tracing back to the original Space Command motto of Air Force Space Command in 1983, Guardians of the High Frontier. And Space Force says, today, after a year-long process that produced hundreds of submissions and research involving space professionals and members of the general public, we finally share with you the name by which we will be known, Guardians.
I mean, I like that he brought in the original motto of the original Space Command, or Space Command.
Yeah.
And, Air Force Space Command. Yeah, and I like that he did that, but like hundreds of submissions.
I wonder which ones.
I want to know what those other submissions are.
Which ones did they turn down?
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Let's talk about some headlines before we go for the week. Let's see. So, Crew 3. We're on for NASA's Commercial Crew program, where SpaceX is sending astronauts to the International Space Station on SpaceX rockets and spacecraft, so Falcon 9 and Crew Dragon. We've had demonstration mission 2 with astronauts Bob Hurley and Doug Bob Behnken and Doug Hurley. We've had Crew 1, which is the current 4 astronauts on board ISS. We have Crew 2 coming in the spring, so around
March.
Yep. We've now got 3 of the 4 names for Crew 3 astronauts. One is an astronaut who was named this past week, or last week in the cadre of Artemis astronauts. So, this is Raja Shari, who I got a chance to take a photo with at Stennis Space Center in February for the State of NASA. Nice. Very cool. Since I've met him, he's been named to the cadre of Artemis astronauts that could go to the moon. And now he's going to space, I think for the first time. He'll serve as the commander. So go, Raja. And then 2 European Space Agency astronauts, Tom Marshburn, will serve as pilot for Crew 3. And Matthias Maurer will serve as the mission specialist for Crew 3. This will be later in 2021.
I just searched up Raja Shari, and I'm like, I don't know. I feel like he should have flown before since he's commander. He's from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cool.
Hey.
Yeah.
All right. Fun fact.
There you go.
All right.
And the 4th crew member hasn't been named yet, and there's some speculation that that's because NASA does want to negotiate with Russia's Roscosmos to, instead of paying $1 million for a seat on a Soyuz rocket to get to space, just trade seats from the U.S. And Kazakhstan. So the idea there is NASA would fly a Roscosmos astronaut at no charge in exchange for flying a U.S. astronaut on a non-commercial crew flight, like was the previous arrangement, minus the $1 million fee for the seat.
This goes back to the shuttle, because it is the same thing with the shuttle. They would fly a Russian cosmonaut on the shuttle to the ISS. In exchange, they would fly an American astronaut on a Soyuz to the ISS. No payment, just handing them off
and changing them. And so far, there seems to be concern from Russia, you know, whether it's for political reasons or competition reasons. They haven't wanted to embrace SpaceX and Crew Dragon for their astronauts yet, their cosmonauts yet. So, but that's believed to be why there's not a 4th astronaut named yet, is that they're kind of holding out hope for negotiations to reach that. If not, I'd guess that there'd be another NASA astronaut on board, since there's 1 NASA astronaut and 2 ESA astronauts on board so far.
Mm-hmm. Or they're in the 2nd JAXA astronaut is already flying on the next one.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. I think they only have 2 in their core as well. Mm-hmm. So I think they have a small core as well. So yeah, that would be, it's interesting to see that an ESA astronaut is serving as the pilot, which is the first time. I mean, so that's super cool to see that now it's fully international with their efforts, like how it was for for shuttle.
Yeah, and I have to imagine that this international effort helps with Artemis too, because as they fly European astronauts to the space, it kind of builds it further builds that relationship that can help out with Artemis. Talk a bit about Launch Complex 48 at Kennedy Space Center.
So LC-48, I believe it's a small sat launcher, I believe, right? It's kind of like bring your own launch pad, and here's a cement slab for you. We've passed it a few times out there. It's kind of just a cement slab out there. Not much you see out there, but yeah, it's a new one that's been kind of built up. I'm not sure how much has been used for it. It's mostly used for like sounding rockets, so rockets that just kind of aren't designed to go in the space, but go in the high altitudes, mm-hmm. And do more research of higher altitudes and weather and stuff like that. They've been building it for the past couple of years, I think, or planning to build it, and it's built now and it's ready for commercial use.
Yep. So when you pass that, right? There's Launch Complex 48 site development, and then, like you said, it's kind of the concrete, slab. They're designed for rockets with a limit. The limit of thrust is 500,000 pounds or less at liftoff. So that kind of defines the category that can launch there. And they don't want to lease it to one provider. They want it to be available for multiple launch providers. The idea being that, not specifically these countries, companies, but companies like, Astra, Firefly, Relativity Space, Rocket Lab.
Astra could 100% use this.
Yeah.
Possibly. Yeah, I would have to see what the thrust is at on the rocket. But they, Firefly wouldn't. Firefly needs kind of like a permanent launch complex. Mm-hmm. They're building one actually at the Cape as well. Yeah, but Astra, their whole idea is like one or two shipping containers, and that's their whole launch complex right there. Just ship them out there, set it all up, and launch it. Mm-hmm. So if you see their pad out in Alaska, it's the same thing here. It's just concrete slab.
That's right. You just bring your own hardware. So that's awesome. It's that smaller class of rocket, and they want this to be open to various companies, and just a single company. Also this week we got some news, little bit of news on Amazon's Project Kuiper. They released the design of their customer terminal antenna. It's a foot in diameter, and they say it's much smaller than legacy satellite internet terminals for customers.
They're talking about Starlink there.
I don't think so. I think they're talking about everything but Starlink, and it's like kind of ignoring that. But okay, And at TechCrunch's TC Session Space 2020 conference this week, it was a mm-hmm. virtual conference that was held. Amazon Senior Vice President David Limp answered a few questions about Project Kuiper and kind of its progress, and wasn't really much to say there. In terms of their timeline, they've got FCC approval, and they've got to have half of their constellation deployed in a couple of years, a few years. So that's kind of the deadline. But so far, they've launched zero satellites. He's confident in Amazon's ability to scale production to have mass distribution because of their work as Amazon, and then especially customer service once they have internet service through Project Kuiper. Ask about how they will launch, if they're kind of at the mercy of Blue Origin, which is, Jeff Bezos founded and runs Amazon. Jeff Bezos founded and runs Blue Origin as the rocket company. If New Glenn's, the massive rocket New Glenn is kind of what they're waiting on for deploying satellites. And they say that they're really just working on things a step at a time, and that they're not in a rush to launch satellites yet, but that they're rocket, quote unquote, rocket agnostic. And so that they would launch with anyone ready and willing to send their Project Kuiper satellites to space. That they're not just going to launch with Blue Origin. Yeah. So, and that's kind
of,
okay, cool.
It would be funny to see them launch on a Falcon 9.
Yeah.
The historical beef between Elon and Jeff, is very historic.
And how competitive, but you know, agnostic
they both
is
are against each other.
How competitor agnostic would Elon Musk and SpaceX be? Would they launch a competitor to Starlink? And
the thing is, Elon is a fan of competition. Like, he likes having competition, and he probably would want to have Kuiper up and running to compete against it.
Sure. And because Kuiper is an Amazon project, when asked about competition with Starlink, David Limp said, "We don't view Starlink or existing broadband as competitors because they enable our infrastructure. We couldn't have Amazon without the current internet infrastructure. And so Starlink will be good for Amazon. Kuiper will be good for Amazon, you know."
Apparently, so. Yeah. Like, what? The same thing. OneWeb said the same thing about Starlink as well when they're asked. Like, we don't view them as competitors.
Well, they're literally competitors, though. And I get what David Lim's saying in that, you know, if Starlink can connect some folks to the internet that otherwise couldn't, they can become Amazon customers and, you know, subscribe to a service or, you know, use our marketplace. So,
I'm really interested in see how Kuiper competes with Starlink, because they are competitors, that they're both offering internet from some satellite. I want to see what pricing is like, since we now know the pricing for Starlink.
Yeah, $500 to set up, $100 a month to maintain it so far.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if, which I am still totally down to pay and use to try it out. But I'm interested in see how they compete. And it would be interesting to see them like fly on a Falcon 9. Yeah, I think Elon would do it. Elon, I'm like, hey, if you're gonna pay me, like, sure, like, and then we can compete, and then we can have some fun.
But there are a number of other small satellite launchers that could certainly.
I don't know the dimensions of the satellite, so I'm not sure if they want to launch them in bulk or they want to launch them one at a time. Yeah. So they could go with a lot of people.
When asked about pricing, David Limp said that they tend to decide on pricing the night before the announcement. So, but that they wouldn't be in this if they couldn't make this thing much more affordable than competitors. So I just have to imagine that they're not talking about Starlink and that they're talking about existing satellite internet providers. Speaking of Blue Origin and New Glenn, NASA's Launch Services Program selected New Glenn in part this week to, they've been given a contract. So Jarrett Jones, the senior vice president of New Glenn at Blue Origin, said, "We're proud to be in NASA's Launch Services catalog and look forward to providing reliable launches for future NASA missions aboard New Glenn for years to come. The award builds on Blue Origin's existing partnership with NASA and will advance science and exploration to benefit Earth." So, not super specific as to what it is there, but they've got, you know, further endorsement from NASA on this. We'll see some. This is through the Launch Services 2 contract. We'll see some New Glenn launches from NASA.
It's cool to see that they're in there already. With their contract.
Yeah. Do you think New Glenn will fly in 2021? It uses the BE-4 engine, right? And that's what powers
the
Vulcan.
BE-4 engine, which is the same engine that's being used on Vulcan.
And that's
and I think they just got Blue Origin. I think they just tweeted out that they got another engine there.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is the flight one or not.
And last year, this past year, probably in the spring or so, Blue Origin shared the gigantic fairing for New Glenn.
Yeah, like, which is massive. Test article. Yeah. And that's the only, other than that, that's the only thing we've seen, other than BE-4s. But then it's Amazon. Like, they just put tracking dishes on their headquarters, on their facility there. Yeah. Like, it looks like they're ready. So, like, I'm just waiting one day to just see, like, a test fit article.
And they have a launch complex out at Kennedy, right?
Yep, and they just, and like a launch mount, part of the launch mount came in a few weeks back. Mm-hmm. So like, they're getting really close.
So probably then this next year we see them fly.
They're very secretive. So it's like, it's really hard to judge them because you don't see them doing anything, but you see what they have done. And like, that's the point to where they're the next step. Like, that's what I'm just waiting for. Next step is just to roll a New Glenn first stage. Or just a test fit article out there to the pad and see if it works.
Yeah, and how would you rate New Glenn in terms of rockets that we see in terms of Falcon 9 and Delta IV Heavy?
So it's around those. So I think it's between a Falcon Heavy and Falcon 9. I think probably more towards a Falcon 9. It's really big. That's one thing I have concern about it, is that it's trying to fit a market that already has a lot of, well, not a lot of competition, but like.
And that's just giving a contract, so it's already getting business.
Yeah. Well, it's part of a contract. No one signed up for a ride on it yet. It's part of the launch services contract now, which now is a it's an option if they go to NASA's launch services.
Yeah.
National Launch Services basically is kind of like a travel agent, I guess you can put it.
Sure.
You know, you say, hey, I have this. I want to go here. And they go, all right, here are the rocket configurations. These are what we suggest. You choose one. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to compete. It's going to compete because there's only like ULA and Falcon 9 for like a medium class to heavy launch capability, mm-hmm. and ULA isn't really in the commercial market to compete.
Right.
They're on government contracts.
And Blue Origin will be perfectly happy with government contracts too.
Blue Origin likes government contracts. They really wanted the last National Space Launch contract, which they didn't get, mm-hmm. but. They could compete probably with commercial contracts and actually give a good fight to SpaceX for who launches what. Yeah.
And I did hear this week that the 14th flight of New Shepard for NS-14 is not going to be this month as planned. That it's going to be looking at probably early January. So we'll see that. So that means that Blue Origin launched their suborbital rocket once this year. They had a hard time because there was a piece. On the Verge early in the pandemic that workers were unhappy about the conditions of working in the pandemic because they weren't considered essential, that their missions were not government contracts and national security, and so they had a hard time kind of with the publicity of even launching this year. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's pretty understandable. So hopefully
So here's my concern with New Glenn is that I think it's too powerful for what people are launching. Mm-hmm. I think it was built to launch a lot of Kuiper satellites at once. Because mm-hmm. I looked up like what the thrust was, and it compares with the Delta IV Heavy, Falcon Heavy, and Vulcan. So like those are heavy launchers.
Yeah.
We've only seen three Falcon Heavies launch.
So they don't have a medium rocket then. They've got their suborbital.
It's a New Glenn. Like you can launch any payload on it. Mm. Pretty much a Falcon. You can launch a Falcon Heavy, which is something that you can launch on a Falcon 9. Sure. It just kind of depends on what you want to pay for.
Okay.
If you want to just give the public a Falcon Heavy launch, then launch a small stat on a Falcon Heavy. Mm. But like, you can compete still with the Falcon 9 with it. I'm just curious. Like it's a lot of power. You know, not all satellites want to have that big of a rocket to pay for.
Sure.
Especially because, yes, the first stage is recoverable and reusable. The second stage isn't. Fairings, they haven't talked about them reusing those either, only the first stage. It's not going to be as cheap as a Falcon 9.
Okay.
That's just how it's going to be. They're larger, more expensive. Just like components they have to replace with it. So it's going to be interesting how it competes.
Okay. This week, President-elect Joe Biden named Pete Buttigieg to run to be the Secretary of Transportation, which is in charge of the Department of Transportation, which includes the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA. And that means that Pete Buttigieg, who was mayor of South Bend, Indiana, ran for president on the Democratic side this year. He'll be in charge of the agency that oversees commercial space launches. And so that's new. That's interesting. And the idea seems to be that he's pretty friendly with science or very friendly with science and NASA and space. And so, No surprises there in terms of, will the road that we're on change. Speaking of the DOT and the FAA this year, the Department of Transportation says that they have seen 35 licensed commercial space launches this year. We'll probably see a few more before the year's over with. I think we've even seen more since 35 was the number there. That's up from 33 last year. And they expect 50 or more in 2021. So these are FAA licensed launches in Alaska, California, Florida, New Mexico, Texas, Virginia, and New Zealand, because Rocket Lab USA launches from New Zealand. So that's something to look forward to next year as well. We also saw this week, the ESA and the Ariane group, they're working on a reusable rocket. Themis and Prometheus. Daryl Saucier, your colleague, awesome wrote this up. Names. Yeah. Terrific names.
Epic names.
Yep. These are kind of design and development hardware. And I think the goal is to have these things in operation by the end of the decade. So like in the next 9 years, it's not anything soon. But Prometheus is this engine that we want to do a deep dive on in the future because it seems very interesting. And it's neat. So
yeah, I'm looking forward to see that. I mean, I want to go see a launch from French Guiana as well. Like that's sure. a reusable one. Like, oh, I'll be so down.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the future. I mean, everyone has to go reusable to try to compete. And mm-hmm. I mean, they have Ariane builds. Ariane 5 is a very reliable rocket. Mm-hmm. So I mean, they don't really necessarily have to veer off it because yeah. reliability is sometimes just as important as price. So, but yeah, nice to see more people get into the reusable. Market.
Yeah. What Daryl wrote for this on this is that the ESA says that Prometheus can use either oxygen and hydrogen or oxygen and methane fuel combinations in liquid form.
Mm-hmm. That's another interesting thing that it's a dual like fuel engine,
right?
Which makes sense because methane and hydrogen are close enough. They're pretty similar with how they, they're both just natural gases. Mm-hmm. So,
and he also writes that Themis will hold three engines along with 130 tons of liquid fuel. Prometheus can vary its thrust and reignite, which makes it suitable for any stage of the launch vehicle. And there's a pretty cool picture of Prometheus, the engine
any
there.
Any stage of the launch vehicle. Interesting.
Very cool. In this week's segment that I call hashtag aliens exist, this is where we talk about weird phenomena, et cetera. This week, NASA debunked a very disappointing claim that there would be 6 days of no sunlight this year. Apparently this.
What do you mean? I love my pasty skin. I love it.
I was looking forward to 6 days of night. I mean, that would just be a really cool concept and what a cool way to wrap up the year.
We need to start this.
Yep. But NASA says busting the myth despite false reports. Earth will not go dark for 6 days and we have not issued a statement with this misinformation. Unfortunately, the viral hoax has circulated off and on during the last decade. For NASA news, visit nasa.gov. So, oh, no 6 days of night for us this year.
Oh, darn. I guess I'll sleep throughout the day.
Yeah. This is something else. And then finally, you wrote a piece this week that kind of explains what RTLS is, and that's the when SpaceX lands their first stage booster on land, not just on their moving target, and that's what we're looking for today's NROL, National Reconnaissance Office Laboratory. Mission 108, which will be the last SpaceX launch of this year. So that presumably means no Starlink launches this year. And Elon said the last launch.
No Starlinks on the manifest at the moment.
At the moment. So
we still have how many more weeks? Like what? Two, three more
weeks left? One and a half.
There is plenty of time for them to fit like at least two more in.
Yeah. New Year's Eve. This is supposed to happen in the next 40 minutes at the earliest. They've got, a 3-hour window from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern time. And, we were out to see this launch the other day. It didn't happen. They had an issue with the upper stage. There was some talk about,
the weather wasn't going to let them launch anyways.
But they opted to not do a static test fire, right? And that this issue maybe could have been discovered in a static test fire.
Maybe.
I
don't know if so. A static fire isn't a wet dress rehearsal. So ULA does wet dress rehearsals. That's mm-hmm. where they fully fuel up the rocket, fully all stages, everything, and they pretty much do a whole launch countdown until they actually launch it, and they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Static fires. I don't know if they fuel the second stage for static fires.
Okay, maybe just the first.
Especially after AMO-6, where they had an issue where it blew up. I don't think they fully fuel the second stage, or if they fuel it at all. So I know they don't use the payload on either. They don't put the payload on static fire. So I don't know if this would have been caught or not.
Yeah.
It could have if they fuel it, but I don't know.
Just to give a live update now, SpaceX tweeted out at 8 a.m., that's 22 minutes ago, T-minus 1 hour until Falcon 9 launch of NROL-108 mission. All systems will look good. It does look good here. There are a lot of clouds in Orlando, but it's not bad. And
live weather report from the science department.
Yeah, and there's also the mission control audio. So, yeah, going to be watching all this cool. One from Orlando. This one's going to be my first launch that I've seen from my apartment. We'll see what I can see. I am eastward facing, so.
You'll see a light.
I'll see a light. I can't wait. I'll bring out the binoculars. How about that?
Yes, you do. Yeah. I forgot to bring those when I went out there that other time.
Yep. All right, that is space time for this week. Some news for Seth. I think next week we plan to record on Fridays at noon this week. There was a little bit of issue with travel and our schedule, but we're going to shoot for noon on Fridays. This next week, Friday, is Christmas Day, so we won't be recording at noon on Friday then. Instead, I'll be joined by my NASA social friend and pal, Alex Orfanos, on Tuesday. And that will be next week's episode, so it'll be a little bit out of time. I'm expecting not much news next week, so it's going to be kind of a year in review for us, for me and Alex, since our first year of attending NASA Social. And then we'll be back in 2 weeks from today with a new regular episode of Space Time. So if you haven't already, go to youtube.com/space explored and subscribe. That's where we broadcast from. Typically on noon on Fridays. And if you enjoy the podcast in audio form, you can listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Overcast, anywhere you get your podcasts. Please subscribe. That helps us out. We really appreciate that. And stay tuned to spaceexplored.com, where we are delivering the latest news as fast as we can. All right, Seth, thanks for doing this. I will see you before the end of the year.
Yes, see you in 2 weeks.
All right, have a good Christmas. Bye.
Bye.